With your help, we can continue to fight for freedom, reach new audiences, and bring important information to the public free of charge. This is not possible without your generosity. Join our quest for the truth and our freedom and donate today. Simply go to tntradio.live. You're with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. Well, before the pandemic started, I had the great pleasure of doing some shows with G.E. Smith, who is a legendary guitarist. He was the band leader for Saturday Night Live for a long time. And then I got to be good friends with his wife, Taylor Barton. We would practice yoga. They let me stay at their house for a few days for some reason. Because GE was playing on a bunch of my recordings. It was awesome. We played some shows over there in the Hamptons, and it was weird because no one was allowed in the venue, but they were at the venue, but they were outside and watching us be televised inside. Remember those insane times? Anyway, they have remained dear friends of mine, and since then I've even been working on Taylor's new record, which is awesome. It's an EP. I think more is to come. I've been somewhat of a producer in that project and collaborator.
Videographer, collaborator.
Anyway, let me introduce Taylor Barton. Is a multi-talented singer, songwriter, writer, playwright, poet, dancer, and producer. She has spent over three decades traversing the arts and culminated into a real 21st century Renaissance woman. Taylor has performed on Conan, Saturday Night Live, VH1, Bravo's Broadway, Best, After Breakfast, Mountain Stage, BET, World Cafe, Acoustic Cafe, Woodsongs, a lot of them. A lot, the FUV, all kinds of things. And as I said, G.E. Smith is one of the busiest and best respected guitarists in the music business. G.E. Smith rarely works as a headliner, though he does sometimes, but as a session musician, sideman, musical director, he's worked with some of the most prestigious artists in rock and blues, known for his versatile style and stinging leads. Smith led the house band for Saturday Night Live from 85 to 95, and toured with Daryl Hall and John Oates and Bob Dylan, amongst others. Mick Jagger, Tom Waits, Bowie is in there. He was in that video. Anyway, welcome to the show, Taylor Barton and G.E. Smith. Taylor Barton Smith. What are you, Taylor Barton or Taylor Barton Smith? Whenever I'm working on one of your video things, I don't know if I should put Taylor Barton Smith or Taylor Barton. I usually put Taylor Barton. Okay.
Only when the bill collectors come around am I Taylor Barton Smith.
Well, welcome to the show. G.E., welcome as well. How are you guys?
Thanks, Joseph.
Good.
Great to see y'all.
It's always good to see you, Joseph. And very excited about what you and I are working on. And very excited about releasing the second single with your input on this very, very new, cool video.
Yeah, I've been working on it the last few days. I have my daughter with me, and I got her to this place where now she'll go night-night in the middle of the day, which is amazing. It's such a huge breakthrough, because before, I used to have to go on long drives, and then she would sleep in the car. I didn't know how to put her down on my own, and so I've learned how to do that, and it's awesome. So yesterday, I was kind of aware that I had a little bit of a deadline with your video. And when she goes night-night, I sleep with her. And then so we're both taking a nap. And she ended up waking up first. And I was like, uh-oh, I'm not going to get away with working on Taylor's video. That was my plan. But if I even move at all, she wakes up and is like, milk, milk, I want milk. Anyway, so I didn't get to the video until after I dropped her off, which was in the evening. But it's cool. It's coming out really good. Utilizing AI, but putting in interesting prompts. So what do you think of that? This idea of utilizing AI in a modern music sort of promotional campaign and video making. You like it?
I love it because it's cost effective for sure. Mm-hmm. And it's brand new territory, to summon up the things and the ideas and the images and the temperament is sometimes hard to translate to a videographer just, you know, standing out there, because you only have one or two dimensional systems working. This one brings so much, you know, the prompts that we did suggest, which we won't give away, but we suggested, you know, it was amazing what you have there now. And of course, you've put in your own ideas too, but, you know, to illustrate what a song might mean to a songwriter versus what a audience person might hear when they hear the song are two different things. So now the songwriter can suggest what is going through their mind besides singing it and writing it. Well, here's my idea of the movie of it.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I kind of want to give away some of the prompts, but I won't, because it's an interesting trajectory of where, of like, in terms of, like, you know, I do want to give away one of the prompts to tell us the story, but I won't, since you want to keep it a surprise. But yeah, it is a form of creation. I guess I can say that without giving away any of the prompts, because there was an aspect of the dynamic of the room that we're building in. And then it's like, oh, put this aspect in the closet, so to speak. And then all of a sudden, no, actually make that into the bed. And then, so it creates this world, and I'm trying to talk around the prompts while describing it still, but it creates a world, because a lot of the pushback on AI art is, you're ripping off previous artists, but you're the one giving the prompt. So I think of it as more of like an Andy Warhol type thing, where it's like, you know, this soup can is art. Well, my idea of a prompt is art with AI. You know what I mean? Almost like,
yes,
there's
absolutely
a cheapness quality to it that I think is aesthetically pleasing and has some kind of historical precedence in the art world. The fact that it's almost cheap. What do you think about that, GE?
I agree. And and what I like about it, what I've seen so far, what you and Taylor have done, is that it both enhances and amplifies what's in the song. You know,
right.
It takes it even a little further out, which is great, you know, because it makes it visually exciting and worth looking at.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the video makes the song much more dangerous than what it sounds. I mean, the song, I feel, is very powerful, Sleep in My Bed. But the video is, you know, really enhancing it to a much darker, deeper level than if I were driving in a car hearing it.
The Dark Mind of Joseph Arthur. Now,
it's also mine too.
It's both.
You know, it's really incredible. And I do agree with you. I don't think that it's ripping off an artist, because you could say the same thing about musicians who collectively will go pick up different licks and put it in through Pro Tools and pull samples. So now for us, AI is allowing us to collect different art and film and sound and texture and put it in a different collage. Mm-hmm. So it is original. And, you know, and to bring a timelessness into it, because we can go back to a different time and go, well, we'll call on that and bring that in. You know, it's really amazing.
You know what's interesting is I put prompts in again yesterday, and I started all the prompts with it with your lyrics. That's it. And I just put into AI, make an image for this in wide format. And both times, in different AI programs, it chose like a 1950s boudoir style like bedroom.
Yeah, I love that.
Isn't that wild, though?
Yes.
Like, why? Why would it do that? Like, that's the weird thing about there is like sort of a ghost in the machine, because like, why? It nothing in the song says 1950s boudoir bedroom, right? It doesn't say that specifically. It has that atmosphere, but it never really says anything like that, right?
No, but you know, but this song does kind of harken to a historical moment, what's it like to sleep in my bed? You know, where, like somebody new is, what, you know, you're coming into my existence, my experience. So it might have picked up on a somewhat, you know, suggestion of history, but oh, it's just incredible. That's why I'm so excited about it. I mean, I'm excited about the song too. I think the song is so strong with what you did, what you, you know, what you sang on it, what Josh sang on it, what GE played on it. And when I first wrote the song, it kind of reminded me a little bit. I mean, it wasn't copying at all, but it was sort of reminded me of a little Leonard Cohen-ish melody and how it was building. It was sort of a quiet little meditation that builds into a big, you know, idea. Yeah, I feel excited. I really do.
And where do you think your enthusiasm comes from? Like to sort of pursue the modern music business as head on as you have? I mean, you've picked out some cool collaborators, where did this energy and this sort of motivation to, there's a lot of people, a lot younger than you who are just at the beginning of their musical journey, right? And I don't mean to say that in a rude way, a lot younger than me and you, like not just you, but that aren't embracing modernity the way you are. So I guess the question, the basis of the question is, what is giving you this enthusiasm and this sort of aliveness in your dream still?
Well, I can tell you when I was 35, 36, I was in the Beacon once GE was there, and Emmylou Harris was about to go on. She was in that portion of her life when she had just released Wrecking Ball. And I heard her singing in the, you know, the dressing room, and she was trying to hit her notes, you know, to go out and do that really hard lift. And I thought to myself, I really want to have my music last as long as I thought Emmylou was already lasting. Now, she was probably only 49 then, but in my mind, right. She was like 70, and I was like, exactly. I want that. You know, that's what I want with my music. I'm not a one-stop shop, a one-hit. I never was. I never will be. My art was, for me, meant to be a lifetime experience, and it's more about when I feel the emotion to write a song, or something. You know, something triggers me, and I really need to express it. So I think that keeps me alive and modern. And I believe in all these other artists that, you know, Matisse drawing from his bed, Zola writing to the very end of his life. I mean, you know, there are many, many people who just, they do it, they get their hit, they get bored of it, they move on. I also think it's because I was a songwriter and not so much a singer from the start. The writing was the most important to me. And also because I never had a hit, I still have hope that there might be one, you know?
Right.
And maybe not even in my lifetime. Dream has never died for me. And another person would have thrown in the towel a long time ago if that was the only thing keeping them going. But it isn't the only thing keeping me going. And I'm very, very inspired by other songwriters, too. Like when I hear a good song from a, you know, 18-year-old or a 30-year-old or whatever, I'm inspired. They're talking to me.
Yeah, no doubt about it. It's a dream. I still feel as motivated and charged up by the whole thing as ever. And it's just broadening out into other things. And just like, yeah, I don't know. It feels like there's a whole honoring of life that we have to do, you know, that there's a gift of this world that we've been given. And if you have some sort of passion and creative passion, you know, you have to explore it to the fullest. I mean, have you ever overcome areas of your life where resistance took hold of you and you didn't feel inspired? Did you ever think you were at the place where, it's over yeah. now? And then,
many a time.
And then overcame? How, talk about that. How'd you overcome?
Oh, geez, hurt me several times. That's several. It. Never going to do times. It.
I'm never going to write done. Another song. I'm never going to do it.
How did I get over it? Well, you know, there's a tool for a writer. When you get writer's block, you know, you just, you do it too, but I'm not an artist. I'm not a like drawer, but I will draw. And I will throw just words in to try to get jump started. Or I will sit down and do yoga for an hour and make a playlist of my favorite songs to try to generate, you know, I'll go listen to Bonnie Raitt, and then I'll go listen to The National, and then I'll go listen to Sarah Jarosz, and then I'll throw in a little Roseanne Cash, and then I'll get Tracy Chapman and this one and that one, all these people that I love. And by the end of that hour, after I've settled down and gotten over myself and my ego, I get inspired again. But it's always different. Like, you know, I never know. Sometimes it's a word, sometimes it's a sentence. Sometimes I'll watch a movie and go, oh, that just made me feel this way. Or I just wrote this song that I sent to you a year ago, but it took a long time. It was about an article in the paper about a guy who got killed, who was an Uber driver. I just wrote a song about him because I was so inspired. Just, you know, it was just an average day for this guy going to work, and he picked up the wrong person.
Wow.
So I wrote a song about that. And
that reminds me of the Beatles. I read the news today. Yeah. Oh, boy. You know, and then
it doesn't sound like that, but it's, yeah. you know, stuff like that. Just paying attention to the headlines. I wrote one of the other songs, If Your Son. I was reading the paper here in Florida and not very happy with what I was reading all the time. So I wrote that song, and then I didn't even know when I wrote that song that that song would embody the experience of that little girl next, Benedict, who was bullied in her school, and these girls beat her up in the bathroom, and then the next day she committed suicide, and I was sort of highlighting that hatred of going after people.
Yeah, I hate bullies.
Yeah, I hate bullies too.
Let me take a quick break though before or go ahead, finish what your thought is.
That's it.
You're about to say so though. You're about to say something. No,
well, that's
that
how
was
I get
it.
Inspired. I get okay, inspired. That, I pay
all
attention.
Right, awesome. Let me take a quick break. We'll be right back after these words on TNT.
TNT's David Curtin.
In my mind, government spending in the UK is absolutely horrendous. It has got completely out of control over the last 14 years of Conservative rule and 13 years before that of Labour rule. You would probably be astounded if you actually knew how much the government spent. In this financial year, these are the figures, the estimate for how much it wants to spend on everything or how much it needs to spend is £1.2 trillion or $1.2 million, if you like, which is an amount of money that we cannot really comprehend.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT radio listeners rely on TNT radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Military families often sacrifice precious time away from loved ones while serving our country. And for those with children, the separation can be especially difficult.
We were worried that with him leaving, that she would lose those connections with her dad.
Some of life's best moments happen between parents, children, and the pages of a good book. United Through Reading provides that connection.
You can watch your mom or dad read a book to you, and it almost feels like they're really there.
We ensure they remain a consistent, meaningful part of their children's lives, no matter the distance.
Just seeing Jacob recognize Daddy again after a long time just melted my heart.
And now, as we're facing greater isolation from our loved ones, United Through Reading is also available to veterans. Learn more about United Through Reading and download our free secure app at unitedthroughreading.org.
You're with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast. I'm here with Taylor Barton and G.E. Smith. You brought up Emmylou Harris's Wrecking Ball. You're right. I can't believe she was 49 when that happened, or maybe 49, because, like, you know. Yeah, I thought of her as, like, sort of like, you know, an elder state. It's men at that point, but that's the way the music business used to be. It used to be a young man's and woman's game, and then increasingly it's like an ageless institution. But I also, that album in particular was kind of a prelude to Time Out of Mind, Bob Dylan's thing, because it was Dan Lanois producing.
Exactly.
and getting his like groove on the magic of what he could do with a singer-songwriter. Did you ever have any dealings with Dan Lanois? I would think you guys would be sort of thick as thieves if you ever got in the same room together.
I've met him and talked to him a few times, but we saw the Wrecking Ball band play, you know, with Daniel playing in it, and great band.
Yeah,
really,
I loved his productions. Yeah. I mean, I was trying to get GE back then. Do it like that.
Right.
Like he really had a sound that was amazing. And, you know, where is he? I think he lives in Santa Barbara.
He is such a like interesting, I want to say weird guy, but that sounds mean and I don't mean it that way. He's just such an unusual character. I think he's like pretty much a genius. Like he looks like that or something. You know what I mean? Like, I do know some of his tricks, you know, because I ended up making a couple records with Mike Napolitano, who worked in New Orleans. Actually, we did it on Esplanade and Decatur. Esplanade was the street Dan Lanois' studio out there was. What's it called? He had a great studio out there.
Yeah,
that's where they
yeah.
did Time Out of Mind, and Afghan Whigs recorded there. I'm going to have to look it up. Do you remember, GE, the name of Dan Lanois' studio?
No, I can't remember the name of it.
I do remember it was in New Orleans, though, and I know Brady Blade was down there with him then. And,
yeah, and I think Nick Cage yeah. bought it. Dan Lanois, I'll look it up on the break and get it. It's it. But anyway, so Mike Napolitano, who's an engineer and producer, he's married, I think, to Annie DeFranco still, and did a lot of records with her. But he used to, so he knew all of Dan's sort of tricks. One of them was this thing called the Gatorgan. Have you ever heard of a Gatorgan, GE?
Sure.
So the Gatorgan, you know that real high, because Dan Lanois with Brian Eno did the Joshua Tree. So you know that real high, like eerie sounding, amazing sounding, sustainy thing?
Yeah.
That's the Gatorgan.
Vox made those in the 60s.
I love that sound.
Yeah. So the Gatorgan is like, so it's basically a guitar that apes an organ, but it's like, because an Ebow can do it as well, but it's not as mystical
different.
Sounding, the Ebow. It's different.
It
the Gatorgan.
Kind of synthesizer.
Yeah. So it's specific. So if you ever want to do a Dan Lanois inspired production, Taylor, we should get a Gatorgan and we could do it.
We're gonna do it.
And it's a lot about the bass too, the New Orleans
bass.
And the reverbs.
And the reverbs, yeah.
Different reverbs.
Yeah, we are definitely doing it with the new song about the guy.
All right, let's do that. Let's make it a Dan Lanois, an homage. Because also, like, Time Out of Mind, the Bob Dylan thing, is similar to Emmylou Harris. I remember when that came out, there was all this mystique around it that was like, oh my God, Bob Dylan hasn't made a record in a million years. And then it was all like, I ain't looking for nothing in anyone's eyes. It seemed like his, like, last statement before he was going to go beyond. It just had that intensity and air to it. And then, of course, since then, he's just made like countless records and still been on a never-ending tour for the last 40 years since then. But, like, you know, it do you remember that when that came out, that vibe?
We loved that record. G was on a tour with him then, and I played I ruined that record. I played it so many times.
What was it
for the Bells? For whom the bell?
Yeah, what was it?
The Bells.
Ring Them Bells.
Ring Them Bells was amazing. That whole record was amazing.
Dark yet, but it's getting there.
Yeah.
The Highlands, the last 15-minute long song. So, GE, you toured with him during that era. What did you ever ask him why that record was so magical?
No, Bob didn't talk about like stuff like that.
Right. You know? I would be such a nerd if I was like, I would blow it in a second. You are just cool because you don't care about stuff like that either, right?
I care about, you know, but the thing that Bob did with me that was great was we would do a little acoustic set in the middle of the show, just me and him with acoustic guitars. And he would just play anything that we had never talked about before, you know, just anything. And I would just watch his hands and follow along. And some of the songs were great. And he would teach me the songs. He'd actually sit on the bus and tell me the lyrics and take the time to do that, you know, which I thought him being Bob Dylan, that was pretty generous of him. He didn't have to do that, but he did. He was great.
That's amazing. So were you ever on stage with him where you're following along his hands and where you got lost or like, and what would you do in that case?
Just hope that the moment passed quickly.
All right, guys, are you going to do this song or what? Sleep in My Bed. This is a great song. Anyway, go ahead and set it up, Taylor. What do you think?
Okay, come on in if you want.
All right, maybe I'll hum along.
My side man is taking a sip of water. Maybe I won't.
Got to.
Yeah, GE wasn't in the camera. It would sound like I was an amazing guitar player.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
What's it like to sleep in my bed? Does my memory haunt his head? Does he move real slow, then real fast? Did you think his love could last? What's it like to live in my house? Did you think you'd won the sound? Are you feeling our desperation trapped in a bad relation? What's it like to sleep in my bed? Are you cut and starting to bleed from sleeping with that creep? Have you noticed you're on high alert? You've been exploited and hurt. Are you bound and no longer free? There will never be two but three. His discarded girls, his little past, into a public past. What's it like to sleep in my bed with my memory stuck in his head? This is fleeting serenity is leaving. Friends lose me.
delight to sleep in my bed.
With my memory stuck in his head. Are you reaching for the med? What's it like to sleep in my bed?
Wow. Amazing. I sung a little bit of background on that. I didn't know how to make
it. I heard you come in there. Yeah,
I came in a little bit. I love the middle eight on that one. That is like...
Taylor writes good bridges.
Yeah, what's
Paul McCartney. He comes up with those great bridges. She does the same
bridges thing. Are sometimes the best parts of your songs. It's true. What is what goes into the bridges? Why are you good at writing bridges? And why have bridges gone out of fashion?
I don't know. But, you know, it's not like something I even think about. I mean, you know, the one thing that I think might influence that is because I was a dancer for so long before I really started writing music. You know, you got to make all sorts of balancing choices. Like if you're doing a triple pirouette or whatever you're doing to pull the, you know, scales together. And even though I was not good at math, I was really good at dance. And they say that that part of the brain is the same part as math. So it must be some sort of structural thing that I get that I employ in the bridges, because honestly, another thing is when I first met GE and I was first on the Bob Dylan tour bus, where I first started writing the songs, I wasn't using an instrument at all. I was always singing the melody into the Walkman back in the day. So I think that gave me a huge liberty to just, you know, soar off into unknown land, because I wasn't being held down by 12 chords, right?
Held down.
12 notes.
I think one of the things that maybe Taylor doesn't think about is that one of the reasons she writes great bridges is because she listened to so much really good music when she was a kid.
I did.
It's just in there. It's in her head. You know, she doesn't have to think about it. Like, okay, I sang two verses, two choruses. Now that other part comes.
Yeah. You know, Kevin Bacon has a great on Instagram. He does Monday a Night Blues show. Every Monday he pulls out his favorite records and talks about why he likes them. And Kevin and I are exactly the same age. And I mean, we should be family members because our fathers knew each other. We don't know each other well, but we come out of the same thing. And he brings out this Joni Mitchell record on Monday. And I had all the Joni Mitchell records. And when I was 12 and 13, I would pile them up on my record player and go to sleep to them. So I would listen to 7 Joni Mitchell records, even though I was asleep every night. Or Neil Young records. It would be like Joni Mitchell's Blue, Neil Young's Harvest. Maybe there would be some Fleetwood Mac in there, or Stevie Nicks at the time. Was just coming around. I was so into, I had all the records that ever were. And I had them alphabetically.
Did your parents have them or did you get them?
No, my father was a big, he loved records too, but he had like Louis Armstrong and Nat King Cole and Ella Fitzgerald. So when I was really little, he would come home and play them and I would dance around with them. But I bought, I think, every record that came out from 1970 to 80, and I spent all the money that I made. I worked in a cheese shop and there was a record store next to it, and I would take the money in that day and go in and buy a record.
Isn't that funny? You would never have to do that these days. My parents had Jim Croce, Joe Cocker, and the Four Tops. That was like the only records they ever played. And I then had a bunch of Kiss albums, and I think I had Tattoo You by the Rolling Stones, but I certainly, like, you know, had a thwarted, I didn't get inundated, but I did have 1980s rock radio, Casey Kasem in Top 40. And I listen to that all the time. I think that got into me. What about you, G? What did your parents have good records?
My grandmother, who I grew up with, had Nat King Cole, Louis Armstrong, Ella Fitzgerald, and Duke Ellington records. And I don't know why she did. My little Lebanese grandmother had those records. And
amazing.
That's the first music I remember, Nat King Cole especially.
Yeah, me too. When my dad passed, we had Nat King Cole playing around, you know, in his headphones as he went off into the ether.
Wow. But
what I want to say about you, Joseph, is Ohio is best known for breaking the best music. Like, they always bring the songs to Ohio first. Mm-hmm. And if it goes in Ohio, it's good.
That's true.
Remember Kid Leo?
Yeah, Kid Leo. Yeah, what is it? WMMS.
Yeah.
I got it. WMMS, Kid Leo.
Early 80s, you had to go out there to Ohio and run the record by Kid Leo. And if he liked it, then it had a shot.
And there's a funny one with Lou Reed telling him to F off or something.
Right,
and Lou Reed getting, you remember that one?
Sure.
Where Lou Reed told him to F off. And then he was like, he burned his bridge at the, just a punk rocker till the end. I got a couple songs on my new album, two in particular, where they have the same verse. Verse one and verse two is the same verse. I only wrote one verse. And I mean, I'm a wordy guy, so this isn't usually a deal, but this happens to me in songs, and I want to run this by both of you guys. One of them, I've written a second verse, but I never trust the second verse as I write in this predicament, because I'm doing it on purpose just to do what I'm supposed to do, to have two different verses. What do you guys think on that? Do songs need two different verses, or can it be verse one can be the same as verse two?
Well, I mean, there's the call of the gospel songs where they, you know, they
call and respond.
Call and respond. And I mean, I tell stories. So I'm always about a beginning, a middle, and an end, and paint the tapestry. But, you know, I have such great faith in your songwriting, and that's your instinct, that's the right thing.
If you're saying what you need to say, that's it.
Yeah.
Look at the great blues guys like Howlin' Wolf, Muddy Waters, Elmore James, those guys. They'd sing the same verse 3-4 times in a row. Because they liked it. It felt good.
That's what I was looking for. Permission. Let me take a quick break. We'll be right back after these words on TNT.
She used to dance and dream of a better life, a brighter future, with nutritious food to eat, a chance to learn, to get an education, and do incredible things. Today, thanks to Children International and friends like you, she dances for the world. Together, we give children in poverty a chance to set their sights high and achieve their dreams by ensuring that they have access to healthcare, education, life skills, and more, so they can grow, thrive, and believe in themselves.
Gracias. Gracias.
Learn more about Children International and join us in our life-changing work at children.org today.
You are loved. You are valued. You are resilient. You got this.
You're there for them. We're here for you. Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving.
You're with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Joseph Arthur's Technicolor Dreamcast, here with Taylor Barton and G.E. Smith. We're talking about songwriting, and GE just reminded me that the blues guys would sing the same verses over and over again and gave me permission to do that if I want to. That's what I was looking for, permission, because with art, there are no rules, but then there are rules, and you got to learn the rules before you break the rules, or that's what the people who make the rules say about the rules. Who knows? But, you know, an aspect of songwriting, obviously, a big aspect of it is, or maybe even all art, is there's a spiritual component to it. Taylor, what is the spiritual component that you're tapping into with your music, do you reckon?
Well, I mean, I always I always feel like God's on my side. However people interpret God, it's their interpretation. But I just feel a strong spiritual force in my life. I always have. I mean, I kind of had a rough upbringing with my mother. And so I really kind of early on was looking in the Bible and, you know, looking for help outside of myself to feel safe in a world that I, you know, didn't feel safe in. And I found that in spirituality. And that doesn't mean it has to be in the church. It's also outside for me. Nature is hugely big, you know, my church. I love what you can find outside. And I don't know if we talked about this last time when we went to see Van Gogh's fields, the wheat fields where he was last painting. One of his paintings is the church outside of the church. And it's the most beautiful painting I ever saw. And I'm like, ah, he got it. He got how I feel. He got that. That's where God is for him. And he captured it, if you look up that Van Gogh painting. So spirituality is a big thing. I meditate every day. I believe in random acts of kindness. I hope that we can be better people to each other. I don't know. What do you think? Am I spiritual?
Oh, yeah.
I love animals. You know, I find a connection to an animal. In fact, I went to the zoo today, and this bobcat was looking right at me.
Why'd you go to the zoo?
Because my daughter's here, and I was like, let's go. We haven't been there in a long, like, years. Let's go over there. And I wanted to see, you know, when she was 4 or 5, I used to take her there. And just, I like animals. And I, again, read an article that this guy who had post-trauma was going to this zoo 2 or 3 times a day, and that it had quelled his anxiety. So I was like, oh, let me go over there.
Let me ask you this about you going to the zoo with your daughter, because now she's in college, right, and a teenager, yeah, and all that kind of stuff. So how sad am I going to be when my daughter is that age? Because it's like I have the 2.5-year-old, almost 3, and I'm so keenly aware that this little being, you know, is going to grow and change and be different. Is it really sad when they become teenagers, or is it amazing?
It's amazing. I mean, they become their own people, but there's still the sweetness, you know, that little gem is there. And she was taking pictures of the flamingos, and, you know, she saw it through a different lens, but she loved it. She definitely, we really had a nice time. And, you know, it's like getting out of your own head. We saw this white albino alligator. I was like, whoa. You know, I mean, just different things. It's just getting beyond your 4 walls, you know?
Joseph, you know what they say about having children?
What?
Kids. They take you hostage and then they abandon you.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, she does. My daughter does that to me on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Like she abandons me on a daily basis, like now, currently, like, and then she can win me back. Like all she has to do is like say daddy. And like, and it's a wrap.
It's the best. It's the coolest. It's the best.
It is the coolest. So Taylor, you're saying too about how like you had this like sort of a rough thing with your mom, and it reminded me in regards to your reaching for spirituality, and I relate to that, having sort of what I would interpret to be, you know, a difficult childhood on some level, and then reaching for God and all that stuff through. As a result of that, it reminds me of the John Lennon line, God is a concept by through which we measure our pain. It seems like the people that really go to God have to kind of go through a lot of pain to get there. Is that always the case? And did you ever end up resolving your situation with your mom and finding forgiveness and sort of
dealing
with all that?
I was never able to have the relationship that I wanted with my mother because she was just not capable of letting people into her world. She was so, she had four daughters and, you know, I was the third, and I'm a very different mother as a result of that. I was so hands-on, but I was heartbroken when she died because I was like, oh my God, it's never going to happen. But I feel her.
What's never going to happen? Like a coming together or forgiving her?
Oh no, I forgave her. I mean, I always forgave her.
That's the important part.
I forgave her from the start. I just wanted her to see me. Mm. You know, I wanted her. Even my name is Taylor, not, you know, joke that I'm Taylor Swift's mother, but my mother wanted a son. I was the third daughter, and her disappointment was visceral to me. And my father loved me, but I wanted my mother to see me, you know. And she was tough, man. She climbed Mount Everest. She was a 6-foot woman. She was, I call iron pants. She was tough, and she made me tough. But, you know, there's a part of me that really wanted to have, I don't know what the word is. Do you know what it is?
Rapprochement, the French word. You wanted to somehow really get together with your mom.
Intimacy.
Yeah, intimacy. You know, like she wasn't the type that would hug you or, you know, I got that kind of affection from my father. Certainly got it. My sisters just being enmeshed with them because none of us got a relationship with my mother. But my oldest sister was like my mother in a sort of harsh way. Mm. And I've loved her. But I learned and I yearned and I gave my daughter everything I couldn't have.
Hey, GE, why do you think life is so painful? And why do you think some of us find music as a result of that?
Well, you know, it's the human condition. Or to go Tin Pan Alley, it's, you know, into every life a little rain must fall. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody slides through.
No, dude, nobody does, dude.
Poem from England, like back, I think in the 1600s, this guy, Sir John Suckling, he said, sometimes even the innocent escapes not the thunderbolt. You know, you never
most
know.
Of the time.
Most of the time, you never know what's going to happen. But, you know, you got to keep a sense of humor about it.
Absolutely.
You got to, or else it's too terrible, and because bad stuff's going to happen, but good stuff's going to happen too.
Yeah, and we go beyond. Anyway, you guys are amazing. Play a song for us real quick. Sure. We're starting to take away all the time.
This one actually is a good segue from that story. This is called House of Light.
Hold on, let me see. What key are you going to be in there? Okay, good. Capo.
House of Light, and this was on my House of Light.
Nice.
Gonna build me a house of light, a house that's sturdy way out of sight. Don't get too close, I might be real. A ring of angels gonna serve me here. No one can trespass, no one can see. Army of ghosts that's around me.
Red poppies will guard my yard. They'll seduce you. You will fall hard. I will wait like a sunflower on an August day in a passing shower. Down you go on your hands and knees. Down you go on your hands and knees. Down you go on your hands and knees. Mercy, man, set you free. Mercy's gonna set me free. I live in a place nobody knows. A place of light that I call home. It's safe and still, high on a hill. The only sound are the windmills. See horses ride through the night, in and out of the moonlight. Lanterns lead like stepping stones in my safe house where I live alone. I will wait like a sunflower on August day. In a passing shower, down you go on your hands and knees. Down you go on your hands and knees. Down you go on your hands and knees. Mercy might set me free. Mercy's gonna set you free. Gonna build me a house of light.
Beautiful. Mercy's gonna set me free. I think that's what separates Christianity from most of the other religions, is the needing of mercy to set us free. Isn't that right?
Yeah, well, Buddhism, compassion.
Mercy. Yeah.
But they're two
different. Buddhism feels more like self-empowerment and, like, you know, overcoming. Whereas Christianity is depending on the mercy of God, I guess.
True.
Well, you know what I've noticed about Buddhists, which is interesting to me? Like, we were talking about just God, going to God, looking for safety and, you know, something to make us feel whole. Buddhists, I find, a lot of them are very angry. And they really need to sit and... I can tell you a handful of people, because I've been, you know, practicing Buddhism, and I'm angry. I didn't have that relationship with my mother, but a lot of people have a lot of violence inside that they're trying to, like,
repress. Yeah, it's all about, well, that's the other thing. That's why I vibe with Christianity, because it pinpoints the importance of forgiveness. If you want peace, you have to forgive, or if you were, they call it the kingdom of heaven. But Eckhart Tolle calls it.
We got to get to why I love you as a songwriter and what I hear. You do have forgiveness. You do have redemption. You do have spirituality. And why and how and where did that all come? You know, how did that?
I work on it now. I work on it on a very active basis, daily basis.
Yeah, but it was there when you were 22. It was there the first
time. I think I was trying to redeem what was a really kind of dark feeling life, you know, and I had this, like you, as a child, I sought God. And so I had a connection with what I perceived to be God or God from a very young age. And I always felt this deep need to honor him. And yet I would still like succumb to sinful natures and fall off the mark, way off the mark. And
well, even, we all did.
Yeah, even recently-ish, you know, not that, you know, like I'm not even like making any claims, but it's something I still work towards. All and I appreciate you saying all that. Well, the time is ticking away now. I'm supposed to have a heart out in 5 seconds. Tell everyone where to find you, Taylor.
Bleep it, Taylor Barton, Spotify.
Taylor Barton, Spotify, and
Taylor Barton,
your IG page too.
TaylorBarton.com. Taylor Barton _Taylor Barton, I think it is.
That's right.
Instagram. follow you, because you will follow, get to me.
Yeah.
And look for our video that
coming
is a
soon.
Big collaboration. We're so excited about it. And thank you, Joseph. You know I love you and love
you. Love you too. Love you too, GE. Back Thanks to for Joseph. Coming on. GE, tell people where to find you too if you want. I don't know if you want.
I'm at the East Hampton Town Dump most every day except Wednesday.
Awesome.
15 to 20 minutes.
That's why I love you. And I want one of your stogies next time I see you. Yeah. All right, guys. God bless. And keep listening, everybody. We'll be back with more on TNT.